Are you recording?
Yep, go for it.
Oh, it's impossible not to dance along to that one and sing along to that one, isn't it? That's about as chipper as you can get.
I love that song. I hope it becomes a new tradition. They played it at Kinnick, right?
Yeah, they did for the first time. And the reason we're playing it, just for full disclosure, is we have a surprise special, quote, media guest this week who's from the website Black Heart Gold Pants that it kind of started the tradition of playing that after Iowa victories that were particularly fulfilling, I guess.
Well, and, you know, they may have started the tradition and with the junior-senior song, but it belongs to the world now.
It does. So, and, you know, beating Indiana is not usually cause for mass celebration, but I think it was the way this game unfolded. And I can tell you, Jim, I know you were traveling and you weren't there in person, but picture perfect day, perfect football weather, bright and sunny, homecoming, colorful. And Iowa came out and kind of opened a can of whoop-ass, which we've been waiting so desperately to see.
Well, welcome to 12 Saturdays. I'm James Bladel.
And I'm Tori Brecht.
And yes, I really feel like I missed the best game, the best home game of the year. But, you know, it seemed like for most of the game, it was Iowa versus Tevin Coleman.
I tell you what, that kid is an amazing, amazing athlete. I mean, I know we were singing the praises of the kid from UNI there, but this guy's a whole new level. I mean, he's an NFL running back right now.
Yeah, he's the NFL's problem now after this. Thank goodness that we were able to. But, you know, and I think someone pointed out, you know, you take away his three ridiculously sick touchdowns and he only had 12 yards.
Yeah, and if my aunt had nuts, she'd be my uncle, right?
But, you know, it's only a couple of I think what it means is, you know, you get really three broken plays, which is a problem and an area for concern. But it was a good win. Let's focus on what went right. What went well?
Absolutely. And really, the defense, for the most part, played really well. I think one of the phrases I saw this week that was kind of funny is that they played a break but don't bend brand of defense. And that really was kind of the case because, you know, it was basically either they were stuffing everything or it was a huge play going for a win. Indiana really had no sustained drives at all. And, you know, I think that bodes well because the things that Iowa was messing up on can be fixed. It was not holding your outside containment with your defensive ends, taking bad angles from the secondary, just some basic things like that.
You don't over pursue, maintain gap responsibility, don't play against Tevin Coleman. All these things are fixable in the games to come.
And the best thing is it'll give them an opportunity in the film room and in practice this week to beat into their heads, you know, hey, you guys, you know, don't be getting all hot, fat, and happy with your 5-1 start here, because you know, if not for a few fortunate things, things could have really gone sideways for them.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. It's really points to, look, this is, you know, substitute a different color red and say it's Melvin Gordon or Amir Abdullah. You know, I mean, there are going to be more backs like that. Maybe not as big or faster, or maybe, you know, a little bigger and slower. But the point is if you don't get this fixed now, you will see someone like that again.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, but the real story of the day, I think, was here was the Iowa offense that I think we'd all kind of hoped to see this year. And, you know, even though you know, Indiana has a statistically pretty poor defense, so do a lot of the other teams Iowa played, and we didn't see that kind of explosion. But we had long passes downfield. We had all kinds of different stuff. We had read option. We had speed option. We had two tight end sets.
Jet sweep.
I mean, we threw the frickin' kitchen sink at them. I don't think you can really prepare that well for Iowa's offense.
Yeah, and so let's talk about the offense for a little bit here. I mean, first off is, full disclosure, I was in a meeting all day Saturday, and I was watching, but I had solid bandwidth, so I was watching the game on my iPad, and someone caught me, and I said, yeah, and I challenge you to demonstrate that it's affected my productivity, this meeting, at all, because I was actually still one of the more effective counselors, so it was kind of like I was definitely multitasking. But I did jump out of my chair a couple of times, and one was the Powell, the long pass to Powell, and then the very quick after that, I think on the immediate next touch, was the jet sweep to Jonathan Parker. And the Parker play, well, really both of those plays against any defense besides Indiana and Illinois and maybe Maryland, we'll talk about that in a minute. Really, both of those plays maybe go for a first down, but not a touchdown. What do you think?
No, I mean, I think if they are executed flawlessly like they were, I mean, Powell basically just ran past the guy, and then it was a perfect throw by Jake Ruddock. I know, some people have questioned his arm strength, but on that throw, I mean, he launched it way like 40 yards downfield, and it just dropped right into his arms, into Powell's arms as he was sprinting full speed. So no complaints there. Although I did notice, if you watch on TV on the replay, Ruddock like kicks his right leg out to put that extra oomph on it, which I've never really seen before. That was kind of cracking me up.
Well, he's got to put everything behind it to get it that, Damon's so freaking fast.
But it worked. But here's the thing that kind of, it was interesting because I know, there's been a lot of grumbling and mumbling about the Greg Davis offense, and I've been there too, and it is frustrating at times. But I watched a lot of football last week, obviously during the bye week, and then a little more this week because I got home early. And we're not doing a lot of stuff that other teams aren't doing. We really were not executing it very well. Now, here's my kind of criticism. I mentioned this week it was awesome that we threw everything but the kitchen sink at them, but I'm going to use a weird metaphor for you. You ever notice that, like, when you go to a restaurant that has like a 7-page menu and they have like burritos and Mexican food, and then they have like pancakes, and then they do that like a kind of a low-end Chili's or an Applebee's or something like that, that they do a lot of stuff, but nothing really very good. It's all
Oh,
just kind
yeah.
of mediocre. Whereas your best restaurant might have like a 1-page menu and they do 8 or 9 things that are just fabulous. I think we're the Applebee's of offense, kind of.
So, yeah, the engineers I used to work with call that F-111 syndrome, right? Because they built that plane to be a fighter and a bomber and a carrier, and everything, and it sucked at all those roles, so.
And I wouldn't say we suck at all of them. It's just it really makes it hard to kind of get into your group, and it's so kind of anti-Ferentzian as well. I think this is actually what's funny is people clamored for years to get him to change and modernize, and well, guess what? We did, and we're still going through the growing pains a little bit, I think.
Yeah. So, the offensive line switched up a little bit on Saturday, and I don't think that that was necessarily a bad thing. I think it seemed to breathe a fresh breath of fresh air. Now, some of that was probably just, you're lining up against Indiana's defense, but it really did seem, people who know more about offensive line play than I do said that Gall had a flawless game. And that Walsh actually, or I'm sorry, Blythe actually did a really good job over at guard. So, I mean, what do you think about that? Was that the shot in the arm these guys needed?
Well, here's another reason you're going to be sorry you missed the game this weekend is that I had the good fortune of watching it with a former Division I offensive tackle, one of my new work colleagues who actually played tackle for Northern Michigan University. So not Power Five
Directional
conference,
Michigan, though, the
but
bane
yeah.
of Iowa's existence.
Exactly. And he actually was one of his position coach, or no, was it his head coach or his, no, I think it was his offensive coordinator, actually, because he's a little older, was actually the head coach of Western Michigan. He got promoted from Northern to Western and was the head coach when Western came in and beat Iowa in 2012. So yeah,
Oh,
they know a little something.
2007.
2007, I'm sorry. That was my bad. And so anyway, what was interesting is that this was early in the game, he had mentioned that it was the guards that were getting blown up for Iowa, not the tackles. And then it did clean up a little bit once Blythe moved over. So I thought that that was kind of an interesting observation. So, I think that that has been kind of the weak spot.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, I was actually prepared when I heard, was watching this again, a little bit delayed and saw that, our center went out, or that our center moved over and we had brought in someone new on center. I was waiting for the false starts. I was waiting for the botched, fumbled snap, and none of it ever came. So that's a good sign. Not saying that, you know, I don't want to jinx the kid, but it seems like, you know, all of the classic rookie mistakes never materialized, and Austin Blythe did a fine job over there at guard, and Jordan Walsh. I don't know, did they say how long he's going to be out, or?
No, I haven't heard yet, but another thing to think about, and this is totally non-technical and probably not even logical at all, but, you know, if you think about it, every one of the kind of out of nowhere, surprisingly better than we expected seasons under Ferentz always seem to feature the story of the fifth year, not very highly regarded player who, you know, spent all his time on the bench and went all the way and then suddenly was cast into an important role. You know, you think about Ramon Ochoa, you think about Warren Holloway.
Yep.
You know, so hey, now we've got that storyline going for this season as well. That's got to be a good thing, right?
It's everything seems to be breaking our way so far. So, but before we start, you know, counting our blessings, let's toast this one, and let's then pivot to talk a little bit more about what's going on in the Big Ten. Let's talk about Indiana. I'm sorry, let's talk about Maryland, and let's get to our guest as well.
So what are you drinking tonight out there in La La Land?
Well, I tell you what, we had a little bit of a cocktail reception after one of my meetings, and they had a Stone IPA out of North County, San Diego. And so I just stuffed two of them in my briefcase and ran upstairs to do the podcast, so I've got Stone IPAs.
Nice. I'm going a little highbrow tonight. I bought a single malt Belvini that was 14 years aged in rum casks.
And, oh, my.
It's quite delicious, I have to tell you.
Well, if we can
on a Monday night,
if you're not going to be offended that we toast beer and scotch,
just make sure that you drink the liquor first, right?
Exactly.
Liquor before beer, never fear. Beer before liquor, never sicker. Isn't that how it goes?
All right, it's wives' tale. So let's toast this one. All right, so let's go to our guest, Tori. And if you follow Iowa sports on the internet, I don't think there's any way you haven't heard of this website.
Yeah, we're going to talk to, well, this is kind of our series of talking to pseudo media members, of, I guess it's media members that we've been talking to in the past.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you say that about Batterson and some of those other guys.
True enough, but you know, the lines keep getting blurred. So this is the popular blog spot Blackheart Gold Pants, affectionately known as BHGP by most people because the name's so long. And we'll be talking today with Planned Sick Days is his username, and we'll have to wait and see if they're comfortable using their actual first name because none of the writers on there actually. They all seem to kind of have a nom de guerre, I guess.
Yeah, so they do all seem to operate under pseudonyms, and it's very internet. Well, let's welcome to Plan Sick Days.
There you go. So I've got Jim Bladel here on the phone with me. Actually, Jim's in, where are you, Jim?
I'm in Century City, Los Angeles.
That's right.
How you doing, Rick?
Good. How are you, Jim?
Oh, just like I was telling Tori, I raided the conference room cocktail bar before I headed up to my room, so I should be good and ready to go.
So here's the best thing about Bladel is that he is my seatmate all these years at Kinnick, but let's see, games he has missed traveling. Let's see, the Penn State last second field goal in the cold. 7-6 up in East Lansing. Like, we got to keep
Indiana,
Jim moving.
Trick or treat Iowa City.
Yep.
He's got to leave him an open bar before the game, it sounds like.
Exactly. They just kick me out of the country. Every time we have a critical season, you just boot me out of the country and suddenly do well.
I think it's why he's so much more pessimistic than I am. He's missed some of the best moments in Kinnick history.
Well, maybe you could try Hawaii. You're like 5 hours behind over there. So you still miss the game, but you still get to enjoy it.
There you go.
It's not a bad plan. Yeah. So, you know, if you've listened to it at all, you know, our podcast is far from professional or profound.
Yeah.
But we'd like to have a little fun with it. So one of the things Jim and I had mentioned is, you know, with looking at Blackheart Gold Pants, you guys all kind of use nom de guerre. So, you know, we introduced you as Plan Sick Days. So we won't reveal your real name if you don't want us to. But I guess,
really don't care. It's not a big deal. You can call me Rick if you want.
Well, that does feel a little more natural, but I think one of the questions that we wanted to talk to you about is, are you were you in on the beginning of the formation of Blackheart Gold Pants, or what's the origin story, I guess?
No, actually, I was more of an acquisition or absorb, I guess. They started about 2007. I was just a message board guy. I did the Google blogger thing. I have no idea why. It was more of a past the time. I went back to school kind of late as an adult and had a lot of time in between classes to kill some time. And, you know, it was that 2010 season, and I thought, you know, really cool to have like a, almost like a journal as the season went on. Cause, you know, we all thought it was a national championship thing, and it wasn't, of course, but it became a habit, I guess, if you want to call it that. So I just continued with it. And then, after doing my own thing, Pat Vince, the founder of Blackheart Gold Pants, reached out to me, and I want to know if I could do my new thing for him. And I said, sure. And those are pretty good guys to get along with. So we're kind of and I wouldn't call it a partnership, but you know, we all kind of do our thing.
So you came on board. They came on board. I think it was the City Boys Incorporated. Wasn't that the year?
Yeah, 07. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was, I don't know the exact date. I know just because it's on the top of my head, because last year when Iowa made the NCAA tournament, it was like the first time in Blackheart Gold Pants history. Yeah, so you can kind of like bookmark the inception date there, thanks to Cosmic Collider. But
well, so does everybody have kind of a different role to fill on the side? You got a lot of different contributors to Blackheart Gold Pants, and
I think so. We kind of have we're all fans. You know, we're not trying to be professional by any means. We all have careers. We do. Pat throws kind of together a season type schedule, so we try to adhere to. I do the news links and stuff, of course, and so I have spare time. I try and write a little bit more in depth, particularly about football. That's my favorite sport. And Ross WB, he's always there to cross the T's and dot the I's a little bit on some of the other things that are going on. And you know, there's always news stories that deserve more attention other than just a little blurb in the news post. And Pat does the podcast, and Adam does the recap and the look ahead. And we communicate via email. It's not like we sit around a boardroom and, you know, like a newsroom and say, okay, this is the plan for it. This all kind of just happens. You know, everybody, hey, I got this for tomorrow, or let's try and get this for Saturday, or however it goes.
So you hear that, Tori? They actually have a plan. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's kind crazy of talk. One of the things I think is kind of nuts is, and I'm a former journalist, actually not a sports writer, but a news journalist, is that the SB Nation sort of model seems like it's really taking off and growing. And then at the same time, you're kind of seeing the traditional media, especially the Gazette, seems to have really bought into kind of that more conversational, multi-platform kind of snarky tone that sort of SB Nation does. Are you kind of seeing like traditional media and blog media almost seem like they're merging towards each other or something? And that's kind of the sense I've been getting lately.
Yeah, that's a pretty good observation. I think, traditional media is moving more towards the online. You know, the sale of newspapers just aren't paying the bills anymore, you know, and so they have to kind of keep up with things. And obviously one of their main competitors is the blog world and SB Nation and, whoever else is out there. There's of course several smaller SB Nation lights, or however you want to call them, and they looked in to see how the content's being published, why people are going there to read it, and that could be the tone. Maybe is I still think people read, you know, obviously I read the Cedar Reps a lot. You see that a lot on my posts, and their stuff is in depth, but yet it's fresh. I guess you want to call it hip, I suppose. They speak our language. And I'm probably right in the demographic they're shooting for, you know, I'm in my 30s, professional, that kind of thing. And eventually they'll probably want to charge me 30 to, you know, I registered at that, or the Gannett. I don't know if it was a whole Gannett wide, but they went to mostly online and then wanted you to pay for it. So they're probably all moving that way at some point.
And at the same time, I think blogs no longer sort of have that reputation of, you know, being some disgruntled person in their mom's basement or anything. And not only that, but the content's getting more sophisticated. I mean, it's still fun, but, you know, a little more polished, I think, too. I mean, I still love the old MS Paint days and stuff like that. But
yeah, we try to keep that part of our, you know. We're in the college sports world, you know, and we're talking about amateur athletics at the end of the day. You know, so we always try and keep that in perspective and try not to be too serious about it. But I think going back to what you just said, I think Twitter maybe changed a little bit of that. You get to interact with the actual people publishing the content and maybe get to see a side of them beyond just what they put out for, you know, the Monday's article or whatever. I think that has a lot to do with what people are picking up readership from that in the professional world, and you get to see, like I said, you get to see who's actually behind the typewriter or, you know, computer.
Hey, well, hey! Twitter, by the way, Jim. By the way, Jim, I'm sorry, but we got a thumbs up from Albert Young's Twitter account on the 12 Saturdays account tonight.
I saw that. That actually made me swoon a little bit for Albert Young.
What's he doing these days? He's still coaching. I know he was giving that a shot.
Yeah, I know he's going to the Iowa-Maryland game because that's what he was asking about, who is going, and I'm actually heading out and meeting some buddies there next week. So maybe
I think there's going to be a big contingent of Iowa fans. I know I have a big group of friends that are going. I was going to make the trip, but the plans fell through on my side. My wife's 8 months pregnant, so I'm not going anywhere for a while.
Well, maybe Delaney knew what he was doing when he was expanding into these major markets with their alumni base, huh?
Yeah, well, yeah, that and what was it? The Rutgers Penn State, their TV ratings. Of course, Purdue played Notre Dame on primetime. That probably didn't help, but they didn't have a lot of competition. But they won the New York market, I think, in their first attempt back in September. So that kind of justified all of that. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens after everybody's been to Maryland and Rutgers once.
So one of the things that you always pen each week, Rick, is the arrest report. And I've seen a few times people kind of push back on you for, man, you're ruining these poor people's lives by publishing your name and all that. That kind of cracks you up. And
yeah.
How did that kind of come about?
All I do is direct people and maybe bring attention to what's already available on the internet. I mean, I don't want to say 3 years ago now, noticed somewhere on Twitter that the University of Iowa Public Department of Safety was publishing these. And whoever was putting the paragraphs together has a pretty good sense of humor because they made sure to add maybe something that was humorous in the tagline, like, you know, pulled from their own pile of vomit or something like that.
Well, you broke you introduced the world to Vodka Sam in some respects, didn't you?
Yeah, that was posted, and then I think it was my friend Benjamin, he's a Minnesota fan. He happened to just find her on Twitter somehow. And of course, we retweeted that immediately, and it just kind of went snowball from there. But, yeah, there's been some – you get that all the time. I mean, I understand why people are upset, but I'm not doing anything that's not already done. And maybe bringing more attention. Should we maybe not make fun of these people? I don't know. Have you ever been to a game and had somebody that's been, you know –
Our favorite game, I think, was last year when it was like 100 and whatever. It was 102, Tory.
Oh,
and
shit, yeah.
That guy got...
Which one? Both of the first two games.
I think it was the second game where the guy was... I'll have to go back to the podcast, but it was actually the funniest moment we've ever had in Kinnick where the guy got bounced out of the stadium because he had... let's just say that he was... He was going commando down there on the aluminum seats.
No. I could set the scene. He was wearing satin boxers with flowers on them and nothing else. And he was totally hammered. He had to have been in his mid-50s, mustache and everything. And then all of a sudden, there's this commotion, and the cops are there. And we're like, what's going on? He's like two seats or two rows down from us, but all the way at the aisle. And Jim and I are always in the middle for whatever reason. And so all of a sudden we start asking people what's going on. And yeah, the lady down there is like, yeah, this guy had his whole junk out on the metal bleachers. And he's just like sitting there. So yeah, he's probably on a sex offender registry now at this point.
How was that not sizzling, man? It was like 103.
Yeah, that can't feel good.
No, I hope he had some sunscreen.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, I don't want to. I'm not on a high horse, man. I partake before games, you know. But I've also had my experience ruined by some guy that threw up all over his shoes and it's like two seats over, you know.
I think we know who that was.
It's possible. No, well, Jim and I just moved to a little bit of a higher rent district. We used to be right at the goal line, and now we're like between the 15 and 20. And I was
because of the podcast.
Yeah.
We're rolling in that podcast money.
Podcast money is just flowing in. But no, right. The people now in our news section just don't have any kind of sense of humor. And I had this guy. Like, give me, like, say something nasty to me just because all I said was, what did I say? I said, I'm like, they're going to hand it to Coleman again. And this guy's like, you don't think the coaches watch tape and know what's happening? I'm like, okay. Clearly just a touch of sarcasm.
Well, it started with the week one against UNI when I was like standing up and screaming during the first series, the first defensive series. And this woman was sitting next to us like, oh, it's going to be like that then this year where you stand up and make noise.
Everybody's upset because they got moved out of their section. So, you know, maybe you should have brought like a gift.
full disclosure, Jim and I are both in our early 40s, so we're probably too old for such shenanigans.
We are.
Apparently, we just haven't matured.
Yeah. I'm not far behind you, so yeah. Well, you're just the right age.
Yeah, I know. I think she's actually I think we're actually in the wrong on this one, Tori. So. Hey, so I have a serious question, well, semi-serious question regarding Blackheart Gold Pants. What's the deal with the fascination with professional wrestling? Is that tongue-in-cheek, or is that from the gym?
I'm not a fan, so you'd have to ask Pat that. He's a fan, obviously. He like, tweets it, so that's his thing. I'm cocky, so, I mean... I know that probably, I talk about that too much, at least online, and that probably annoys the hell out of people. So everybody's got their own thing, and I got my thing, so I don't, whatever, it keeps people happy, you know?
Well, that's actually how I figured out your real identity, is because I used to work with Hattie, who is a huge, hugest Blackhawks fan I've ever met,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, she's in my fantasy league.
Exactly. And so she was like, yeah, you gotta talk to Rick. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then two and two was put together. So I probably tweet about the Blackhawks too much, too. Jim isn't quite bought into the whole hockey thing yet.
You know, we'll and that's why I get so pissed off about football. I really have nothing else in my life. Except for, I'm not a basketball fan.
Hockey's a lot like football on ice. It's a really fast version of football sometimes.
I'm doing my best to try and find something to spread the anguish and pain around.
Well, the Blackhawks actually win championships.
For now. They didn't for the longest time. I couldn't even watch them on TV. So
I hear that...
like mid-90s bowl.
And so I hear that they played junior-senior at
they
the
did. I heard it on
the stadium.
Commercial.
So you know what that means? That means it's no longer that song no longer belongs to the pants. That's everybody's song now. That's a phenomenon now. It's like In Heaven There Is No Beer is no longer just a polka.
Blackheart Gold Pants is like the Pabst Blue Ribbon of SB Nation blogs now. It's like it's gone mainstream hipster, so it's just not cool anymore.
Yeah, we're gonna have to come up with something else. At least they won, you know, obviously if the thing would have turned at that point, because it was late, it was probably third quarter after Iowa had gone out there and ran a couple of I formation into the back of the line and then throw it away series, so if it would all turn on that, then we're definitely doomed, but I think maybe we kept a good mojo going.
Well, and one of those threads today had the most brilliant idea I've seen, and I'd give credit to whoever it is, but I have bad short-term memory issues. But they mentioned that how cool would it be if the junior-senior Move Your Feet song became our version of Jump Around that you play between the third and fourth quarters. I'm all for that. That would be awesome.
I'd take it. I'd take it. It's better than what they play now.
So, yeah, so, we need to make that happen, I think, you know. I think you need to use whatever connections and leverage and pull that you have.
We'll use ours too. It's tremendous.
Now, we'll talk to our two dozen listeners, and we'll convince them.
It'll be like that Water Tower petition a few years ago. Maybe we'll get a few people to sign it.
The journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step, you guys. Just saying, to get deep. So we probably shouldn't talk about him behind his back, but I've noticed that Vint still seems a little pessimistic, a little down on this version of the Hawkeyes this year.
You'll have to ask him. I think he comes out his podcast, of course, Thursday. But I don't even know where to go with that. You'll have to ask him. But go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, he's obviously a big Greg Davis fan, but where do you kind of
well, who isn't really?
Right. Where what?
I think after Ball State, there was probably 7-8 minutes to go before the decision to kick, and I had 3 points on the board, and that was it for me. I think I tweeted something about him cleaning out his locker, so that was the absolute tipping point. I mean, I bought into the whole stuff after the first year when the coaches were fired, that they weren't, you know, getting along and maybe they needed somebody else. And of course, last year, Kennedy, one of his own Texas buddies, come in and things started to look better. Maybe they were communicating and going somewhere. And then the first half of this year happened and it was just completely 2012 all over again. So the run game's not there. I don't know if you can blame that on him. I don't know who to blame it on. I mean, the offensive line just isn't performing up to at least the level we're used to. So
looks like you blame it on Walsh, to be honest.
Yeah, what's going to happen this week? It's going to be really interesting. I'm a Dowling alum, and so I've been watching Tommy Gall play football since he was a D-tackle over here. So certainly, you know, as an old alum, proud to see him out there on the field. I think he needs to stay out there and then keep life where he is and see what happens, at least for another week.
I am totally on board with that, and I wonder if that is actually the solution to the running game problems or if it was, you know, just Indiana.
I think it was a combination of both. I really do. Indiana statistically gave up 500 yards to almost everybody they played except for Indiana State. That was a complete anomaly. I think it was like 150 yards total or something. So that helped them stay out of the 100s as far as total defense, which I think they'll end up here eventually. So, you know, I ran that sweep of Parker practically every game so far, and obviously, you want to gain yards with it, but it's also dual purpose. It's there to loosen up or force the defense to be aware and contain on the backside so that you get bigger running lanes later in the game, you know. And here he goes around the corner for 62 yards. It's not like it was something, a flea flicker or something completely different, something they should have been prepared for. And it kind of tells you how. I think Jacob Hilliard came out and blocked like three guys, though.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, you got to count on Hilliard to take out two guys and for them to commit both safeties to one side of the field. Then it works.
Yeah. Well,
the good news is that Maryland is actually one spot below Indiana in yards allowed in the Big Ten. So let's hope we can take that show on the road.
Yeah, that's a real head scratcher too. I mean, typically when teams join a new conference, you expect one to be bad because of an adjustment period. But they've only played two Big Ten teams, you know. Granted, Ohio State did whatever they wanted to them. Indiana even had a pretty big day. They're giving up over 200 yards of rushing offense, so we should see something. But we've thought that before. I mean, I'm going to be skeptical all the way to the end. I don't care how many. They can win the rest of the games, and I still won't believe they're going to win the next one, just probably because that Iowa State game is going to stick in my head. You know,
exactly.
Iowa State statistically is awful, too, and they had Corey Morrissey, Wally Burnham, and two cheerleaders playing the D-line, and Iowa still couldn't do anything against it. So
Well, and see, that's exactly right, and it's coming around to my way of thinking, which is that the Iowa State game is becoming less and less of an actual indicator of football competency, and more of just like a voodoo slash mental block, because nobody else has these struggles with them. We're going to go on. We're going to have a decent season. We're going to go to a bowl game. They're probably not going to win another game. You know, it just it just becomes further and further disconnected from reality.
Yeah, I watched it though, man. It is burned into my brain forever. You know, just like Red Bank fumbles and Freddie Russell's patched up arm. You know, I'll never forget it. So therefore, I'll probably always be skeptical. Looking at things statistically, and stats don't always tell the whole story either. I mean, Iowa, they had 400 yards against Indiana, but they completely put it on snooze control in the third quarter. You know, they could have ended up with 500, 600 yards, and some teams do. That's why, you know, teams like Baylor continue to roll up in the second half, or, you know, West Virginia or somebody like that, that just keeps going full.
We're going to have to wait till we get 50 and 60 points on people.
Well, 38 points was about 60 for Ferentz.
That's 60 in Ferentz years for sure, obviously.
17 point lead, and it was, I'm surprised we weren't taking a knee in the third quarter.
I was like 110 in dog year. You remember that last game from Ferentz against Joe Pa, and I think that Torrey, if you remember that, he was actually taking a knee in the third quarter. He was killing clock. In like, I want to say there was like a minute and a half left to go in a quarter of football.
Got to respect the game, Jim.
Play to win.
All right, so now we gotta put you on the spot here a little bit.
Yeah.
So, we usually make our guests make a prediction for the next game, and knowing that you're a pessimist, and I kind of fall into that camp as well, just because, well, you know, Iowa State. But, how do you think Maryland? I mean, it's on the road, but that doesn't seem to really faze this version of the Hawkeyes.
Makes them better.
No, they've won something like 7 in a row on the road. You know, it's amazing. I think their last loss was at Ohio State last year.
Exactly.
They looked good up until Ohio State athletes decided to out-athlete Iowa. But you want a prediction?
Yeah, give us your prediction, which we totally hold you to, and you will have zero accountability for ever.
Well, Iowa 24. We're going 24 from here on out. If they score more than that, it's probably because of a defensive touchdown or some sort of miracle. But 24-21, Hawks. I think I was put on the spot in April, and I predicted 9-3 and thought this was a loss. And then I saw Maryland play a couple games, and especially that game against Ohio State. Of course, you're never as bad as your last game or whatever, but I don't know. I think they got things going. I don't want to ramble too much, but even if you go back to Iowa and Purdue, the score was closer than the game. I think Iowa left a lot of points on the field that game too, and it could have been in the 30s. So I think maybe Iowa's kind of fooled a little bit and still going 24 points, 24-21.
24 does seem to be the magic number. If you think about this season, as frustrating it is to watch as an Iowa fan, really the only team that's really beaten Iowa is Iowa itself. Some of the close ones, you know, it's like, I think for most of the games, they've kind of looked like the better team. So, you know, and now the record is starting to reflect that, I think.
Yeah, well, the schedule helps.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Well, it was great having you on, Rick, and you and the rest of the boys over at Blackheart Gold Pants, keep up the good work, and we enjoy and look forward to seeing all the batshit insanity that you guys continue to unearth.
Yeah, well, let them know that we're big fans over here, and imitation is flattery. Although we are stealing the Junior Senior song because that's a thing now.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys,
and go Blackhawks.
Yeah, have a good. Absolutely. Talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Thanks, bye. All right, so tell me what else you saw going into the Big Ten. I mean, I know you were watching the Michigan-Penn State game, and it looked like Dave Walt was showing his true colors, and they were maize and blue.
Dave Whitvoet. Whitvoet. I don't know how you pronounce it. All I know is he, yeah. It's kind of hard not to have that conspiracy theory when you see that guy. But the bigger story from that game in my mind was just how awful those two teams are. I mean, yeah. Really, that was just bad, bad football and stumbling and bumbling and mess.
So I came to this meeting and someone said, you know, I've always seen your tweets about Iowa and I never started paying attention to Big Ten football. But this year, this person was a Rutgers alum. And they said, I'm finally paying attention to the Big Ten because this is Rutgers' first year. And, you know, we lost to Penn State, but we beat Michigan, so it's turning out okay. And I'm like, well, that would have meant something in previous years.
You didn't beat the real Michigan.
Exactly. It's like, you know, I said, you know, look at Maryland. They thought they were doing fine until the Buckeyes rolled into town.
I think Minnesota and Michigan have like switched identities this year or something. It's kind of creeping me out.
Well, definitely Michigan and Michigan State have swapped roles, I think.
For sure. You know, here's what I was thinking about, Jim, is that, you know, going into this campaign, we were told that Wisconsin and Nebraska were the two teams to beat. And I think a lot of us thought that we were excited that we were going to be playing them at home. But I got to tell you, after seeing what are we about halfway through the college football season now, I am more nervous about Iowa's chances against Maryland and Northwestern. Not because I necessarily think they're better teams, but I think they're tougher matchups for Iowa. I think Minnesota and Wisconsin and even Nebraska to an extent are very one-dimensional without real good quarterbacks. And I think Northwestern and Maryland seem a little more balanced, and that kind of scares me a little more. Well, how do you look at it?
Well, see, I've always felt that way about Northwestern, which is why I hate them so much. And as opposed to you, I'm actually still kind of concerned about Minnesota. I know that they have zero pass attack. They're very one-dimensional, but they're very good at that one dimension. So I think they could almost, you know, look similar to Indiana. I'm not super concerned about Maryland, except it's an away game. But, you know, as we've observed multiple times, it doesn't seem to really phase this particular team. In fact, they seem to do a little bit better. I still think that Wisconsin and Nebraska are the two toughest, with Northwestern, are maybe the toughest outs left on our schedule.
Yeah, I could see that. Nebraska particularly. I don't know. Yeah. For whatever reason, Wisconsin just, I can't get over the fact that they have a safety and a guy with like some kind of like mental yip issue running quarterback as a Big Ten supposed conference contender.
They've got all that stuff and Melvin Gordon.
Well, yeah, and Melvin Gordon is their Tavon Coleman, and you know, I don't even know. I've watched some of the Wisconsin games. I mean, their defense isn't exactly, you know, the defenders of the galaxy either. I mean, they're fine, I guess, but they're not what they were. So, I don't know. I think their coach might be a little over his head too in Big Ten football.
So, you know, I'm kind of, and I hate to channel my Kirk Ferentz here, but I am kind of focused on these things as in little mini seasons. And this is something that I know you adopted this philosophy a number of years ago, but I'm really just focused on this next game because it's in between two byes, right? And if you can go bye week and win two and go into your next bye week, I mean, you really can't ask any more than that, right? So I think all the focus really needs to be on Maryland. And looking at the game film and saying, you know, how was it that that Ohio State was able to go in there and just manhandle them up and down their own field? And I think the answer was, because I watched a lot of that game, and I think the answer was is that Maryland has a so-so defense, so-so offense. They have a defense that's, you know, a wet paper towel. And they have a quarterback controversy going on right now that's not the good kind like Iowa had, right? That actually yields a better play from your starter and a more capable and experienced backup. It's actually the opposite of that, where you can't decide which one is worse, you know, quarterback controversy. So, I feel like I'm feeling better about the Maryland game than I was a couple of weeks or even a month ago. How about you?
Well, I hope you're right because I'm going to be there and I'm really excited about that. It sounds like there's going to be a lot of Iowa fans there. I know that tickets were easy to come by. I got pretty good tickets for like $25 and that was like only like 3 months ago or so. So I think we're going to have, you know, it's not going to be a traditional tough road venue compared to some. So that, I think that bodes well. Although the thing about this game is that it's the unknown, you know, and that's what worries me the most. I mean, a team we've never played, a venue we've never played at, for whatever reason, that kind of has me a little nervous. I think that they do have a couple of wide receivers that are amazing, but statistically, their defense, I just read today, is ranked 13th in the Big Ten. So if Iowa can do what they do and what they did against Indiana, they should have a great day. I mean, again, I think the biggest obstacle to Iowa succeeding is getting out of their own way.
So, you know, whenever somebody tells me that a team has a great receiver, it feels like, you know, when you were in high school and somebody tried to set you up with a girl who had a great personality, you know, because great receivers are great until so long as you assume you have somebody great that can also throw to them. And I don't see that coming out of Maryland.
Well, and even a running game, too. I mean, you kind of need both. You know, you're absolutely right about that. A great receiver doesn't really do you a hill of beans unless you've got a good running game and a good quarterback and a good offensive line. So, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, when somebody says, oh, you know, this team, their best player is a receiver, I just kind of scratch my head a little bit and say, that's kind of like saying, you know, that's just trying really hard to find something nice to say. So, I don't want to discount them. I mean, we are playing on the road and, like you said, it is a new venue and a new opponent, but it feels like if we can capture even half of that offensive spark that we had in the first half, and really it wasn't even the first half. I know the third quarter was a punt fest, you know, but we scored, right before half with Wiseman. We scored another, 10 points to end the first half and another touchdown to kind of ice the cake. And so, you know, I feel like if we can keep that momentum going on offense, you know, I think that actually I feel a lot better saying, you know, I'd rather be in Iowa's shoes than Maryland's.
Well, I think that's true. Although Maryland did have a bye week to kind of lick their wounds and get ready, and that concerns me a little bit. I guess four of our next opponents have byes right before they play Iowa, which seems kind of bull crappy to me, but I don't make the schedule. You know, speaking of the two quarterback thing, you know, we didn't really touch on this earlier, but that was kind of a screw you guys outing by Jake Ruddock. I think the competition lit a fire under him, and he was out to show something to his critics. And boy, I think he came through with flying colors.
Yeah, and so I tweeted that at the time is really the best possible outcome you could hope for from a quarterback controversy is your starter suddenly remembers why they had won the position in the first place, but your backup get some reps, get some experience, get some game time, you know, in case they have to go in. I mean, we saw this with 2010 Stanzi, right? He breaks his leg and suddenly you've got somebody who's never taken a snap, you know, trying to protect a BCS season. So I think it was really the best possible outcome. I know there's a lot of venom still going on about, you know, the Jake versus CJ stuff. You know, I don't get it. I think we're embarrassed by the riches we have at quarterback. You know, Jake was hitting some beautiful long balls. CJ, you know, converted, I think, a long third down with his feet that I haven't seen since Brad Banks. So, you know, I think we're sitting really well at quarterback. And I think bringing in CJ, even if it's just for one season, really just gives defenses something else to worry about. And that's almost worth, you know, I hate to say this because Ferentz would never say this, right? But that's almost worth one three and out per game, just to kind of throw them a curveball like that.
Sure, yeah. And CJ is going to be fine, too. Yeah, I mean, clearly he was a little off on the communication with a couple of his receivers, I think, on those screen passes, and threw a really ill-advised pass across the middle, which is, I think, probably the biggest reason why he's not the starter. But you, like you said, and the beautiful thing about that running play that he had is that it wasn't like Drew Tate scramble where he had to suddenly, that was a called play.
Yeah, and that's designed QB draw, and he executed it perfectly.
It was Brad Banks ish. And I mean, if that doesn't give you a tingle as a Hawkeye fan to think about what that could look like a year, a season or two in the future from now, I question your Iowa fandom unless you're just really young. But well, I mean, to think that we could have another Brad Banks type of talent on this team is beyond exciting. So, you know, I hope they keep plugging him in a few series a game, seeing if he can give him a little spark. I'm with you 100% on that. But I think the quote-unquote controversy is done.
Yeah, and I agree with you there. The controversy's over. And it ended exactly the way you would have wished it would have ended. But I just wanted to point out that Jake has not... at least in the 2 years that we've had him, has not shown that he is bulletproof as a quarterback. And so it's good to know that you've got somebody who can step in and who has reps and who brings that extra dimension and is not, the last time he touched a football was sometime in August.
No, I agree 100% and keep the pressure on him. I mean, clearly the competition, galvanized him. And, sometimes you see a guy where if they have somebody breathing down their neck, it makes them get the yips and go bad. Look at Wisconsin and Joe Stavi for an example of that. But I think we're fortunate in that all it did for Jake Ruddock is made him play better. So yeah. Good for him and good for CJ and good for the coaches.
Yeah, exactly. And good for us, the fans. So let's talk about, the people we really want to talk about. I mean, the young guys had a field day on Saturday. I mean, Dez King got his first pick six. We called that at the beginning of the year, right? We said, he's been such a closed down guy, but he hasn't. I didn't think he had an interception, and I knew he hadn't had a pick six. And then we talked about getting the ball into Powell's hands until we were introduced to Jonathan Parker, and then we thought, well, what the hell with Powell? Get the ball in Parker's hands.
And don't forget Tavon Smith. And what I like about all three of those guys, King, Smith, well, and Powell for that matter, too, is that they have a little bit of that swagger, don't get me wrong. I love Mark Wiseman and the plow ahead and the man ball and rah, 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 all that stuff. But, to have those big play guys and pumping their fists as they go into the end zone and standing and kind of looking at the crowd like, hey, check me out. I mean, that's sexy, dare I say it, which, is something a lot of Iowa fans have been clamoring for.
Yeah, let's throw Jordan Lomax into that. He had that, that game save or, definitely game sealing interception in the end zone. I would say that Maben was maybe a bit of a disappointment if we're picking on the secondary.
Did you hear, and I kind of like this, did you hear what Loudermilk said after the game?
No. What did he say?
He said he would have benched himself.
Well, Loudermilk was out of position, but I did see on one of those long Coleman runs that Maben was still blocking his, running with his guy in the end zone when Coleman was 10 yards behind him. It's like, man,
yeah, well, that receiver did a good job too, though, because he opened his eyes wide and put his hands up. I mean, it was a hell of an acting job too. So, I mean, what would you rather have? Your cornerback giving up on the guy that looks like he's about to catch the ball? He doesn't know what.
I don't know. I guess. I hear what you're saying. I just, on the other hand, it's kind of like, you're in your home field stadium and when 70,500 plus people are going, it's a run!
Well, he was so focused on his job, he'd shut out all the external gym. Yeah. But what I meant by liking what Loudermilk had to say is that, to me, that's the sign of a guy that's going to work his ass off to not let himself look bad again. And, if there's one thing that I think sort of, we were talking about how this team didn't really seem to have an identity, but you know what I think their identity is? I think their identity is kind of self-awareness of their flaws and a willingness and commitment to addressing them and getting better. And I kind of am liking that.
I like their identity. I would classify their identity as the do what it takes identity. Because so far they've done exactly what it's take, not nothing less, and really not much more.
But I feel like they're building, the momentum, and I'll be writing my Tuesdays with Torby column tonight, and fortunately I get to pound my chest a little bit because I kind of predicted this
outcome. You did. You're getting plenty of love too on the message boards for.
But I just felt it.
Well,
coming.
You stuck your neck out pretty far on that. So.
But I felt it coming for those exact reasons, though. You know, as soon as you start telling a Ferentz-led Iowa team, you know, oh, you know, you haven't played anybody. Your quarterbacks are no good. You can't. Your offense is boring. They seem to have a way of circling the wagons and getting it done. And so far, so good. You know, let's hope it continues.
Well, and speaking of sticking your neck out, and by the way, it could have completely gone the other direction, right? Could have been another dogfight, just like Ball State. Could have ended up on the wrong side of it, just like Iowa State.
Well, I tell you what, when they came out and went 3-and-out, I thought that was exactly what was going to happen. I was sweating it a little bit.
Yeah, so, but fortunately, you know, I think that, like you said, I think that they see now what a fast start looks like and feels like, and I think they'll want to remember that, and they'll think they'll want to drive for that in the rest of the games. And, you know, if we can put together most of this season's defense with some correctable mistakes from last week and even, you know, 70% of the offense that we saw on Saturday, this is going to be a really – I wouldn't want to face off against us here late in the season. And going into November, that's exactly what we need them to do. So speaking of putting your neck out, it's time now for your prediction against Maryland. You're going to be there, right? You're going to fly out when?
Yeah, I'm flying out. It's a quick trip. You know, I'm going out Friday morning and flying back on Sunday. So, you know, it's a business trip. No, I'm just kidding. Exactly. And our seats I don't think are great, but it should be quite exciting because we're in row B. So it's literally the second row. So I'll probably see the back of football helmets for most of the game.
Are you on the visitor side or are you on the Iowa side?
You know, I'm not even sure. I got them on StubHub and, you know, I think they're like kind of close to where our tickets are. Like they're about at the 15-yard line, but way, 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 way down. So it should be interesting. But, boy, you know, this has been the game I've been going back and forth on really bad just because I don't know that much about Maryland. You know what I think, though, is that I think Iowa has the edge in the trenches. And in fact, Maryland's coach had even said, especially after the Ohio State game, that they still have a ways to go to be Big Ten ready along the offense and defensive lines. And that usually bodes well for Iowa, Iowa State notwithstanding. So, you know, I think the offense is going to be there again. You know, they're 13th, they're ranked below Indiana even in defense. So I think Iowa's going to put up a 30 spot. I do think they have a pretty good offense though. So I'm going to say that, Maryland gets to 24. So I'm going to say 30-24.
Oh, that's pretty good. Okay. So I'm kind of coming at this, similarly. I'm taking the 45 points that Iowa scored. And I'm taking 14 off the board, right? So I'm going to say that it's 31. And why do I take the 14 off the board? Because I think that the pick six, you just can't count on those. They're nice when they happen. That's why they're so exciting, because they're a bonus, right? And I don't think that the jet sweep, while I think it's a good play and it's especially good decoy play, I don't think it usually, the fact that it went for a touchdown, I think was a busted play. So I'm going to give Iowa 31.
Yeah, I think Wisconsin gets that a touchdown every game out of that.
Well, but I also, on the flip side, Maryland doesn't have anyone that can compare with Tevin Smith. So I'm going to take 21 points off of Indiana's score. Okay. And they ended up with, I believe, what did they end up with? 29?
29, because they had to get the two-point conversion.
Yeah. So you know, let's call it 28, and I'm going to take 21. So I'm going to say 31-7, but I'm going to go ahead and be a nice guy and say 31-14, because I think Maryland, you know, it's a home game, so I'll throw in a touchdown for that. So that's my call, 31-14. I'm putting myself way out there.
Yeah, so you're viewing Iowa's defensive lapses as kind of a one-off with Indiana.
Well, I do. I think that they were busted plays. I think they were what the coaches might call teachable moments. But also, I don't think that Maryland has anybody that can exploit with the speed and power to exploit those mistakes the way that Tevin Coleman did. So it feels like, yes, for those busted plays, they probably go, you know, 17 yards with Maryland, and they go all the way to the house Although, you know, I'm concerned. Maybe I ought to go 31-21 because I guess
there was that. Yourself out
I know
of it.
There was that one long pass play. What the hell happened there? I actually lost my connection to the Wi-Fi for briefly when I missed that long pass play. So what was that all about?
He just dropped the ball. It was a sure touchdown to that. I think Wynn is his name. And it was every bit as good as the throw to Powell, except for the part where he just dropped it.
No, I'm talking about the one where they actually where Tevin Coleman didn't score, that rare thing where they had like a 60 plus.
Oh, no,
pass
no.
Play.
That pass wasn't. Are you talking about the one where the guy was wide open in the end zone?
Yeah.
That was more like 25, 30 yards. So, I mean, it wasn't good, but, they, you know, the play I hate, right? The little, throw out one guy
absolutely.
Versus one, it's one-on-one and he's got to beat the guy. So Iowa decided that they didn't like the one-on-one odds. So both guys went to the short guy
nice.
And the other receiver just went and stood in the end zone and just was like,
Yeah. So
until the ball got there, and boy, you should have seen Phil Parker on the sideline after that one. He
all
was
right.
One pissed camper.
So we'll give him 3 points for that. And my final prediction now, after negotiating, is 31-7. You can't tell I've been doing this all week, right? I'm already on my fifth day of these long, drawn out negotiation sessions. So I'm going to be 31-17.
Well, I like that pick, and I certainly hope you're right because you know. I've told you before, there's nothing better than being in an away game where they win, which you have yet to experience.
I hope to, you know, and I just heard that I might be coming back from Korea a little earlier than I thought. So maybe we can, swing that Illinois thing after all.
Well, Flick and I've got it all set up. He's coming up here Friday night and we're going to get up early and drive Saturday. So I think regardless of what happens in the interim, you should plan on going with us because, you know, I, if there's anything on your schedule that's a sure win, you know, more than a home game, it's a terrible Iowa State team. It's going down to this
road game in Champaign.
It's a road game in Champaign in 2014, right?
Fair enough. All right. Well, on that note, I think we're happy over here. We're going to be really happy if we're 2-0 in between these two bye weeks. Have a good trip, my friend. I will be back in town just as you are, celebrating the win. Let's hope.
Very excited that I'm traveling through two of the five U.S. airports that are screening from Ebola now. So, you know, hopefully I'll come back alive.
Well, just watch your temperature.
Don't let anybody vomit on me.
No. So, all right. Well, on that positive note, we'll say on Iowa.
Go Hawks.
All right. That was fine. I can cut that up.
Not really worried about Ebola.